Hi friends, I am your host Jade, and welcome or welcome back to Criminal Curiosity, the true crime podcast that dives into bizarre and fascinating cases. Together we talk about everything in the true crime world, whether you've heard of them or not. So buckle up and get ready to feed your curiosity with Criminal Curiosity. This week we are talking about the murder of 28-year-old Avis Banks, who was 5 months pregnant. So let's get started. Avis Marie Banks was born on August 18, 1979, to her parents Frederick and Deborah Banks. Frederick and Deborah purchased a home in Warren County, Mississippi, in Vicksburg. Vicksburg is about an hour away from the state's capital, which is Jackson, and on the river across from Louisiana. Frederick worked as a street sweeper, and Deborah was a stay-at-home mom and occasionally a babysitter. In September 1975, they welcomed their first daughter, LaTonya Banks. In 1979, they welcomed their second daughter, Avis Banks. And in 1985, they welcomed their last daughter, Frederina Banks. Having two sisters, as you can imagine, is like having a built-in best friend. You play together, you laugh, argue, and talk about everything. And if you have a sibling that you're close with, you understand that sibling bond. Avis placed a great value on education. She held herself to a high standard and was quite critical of herself. Plain school was something Avis and Frederina used to do frequently. Avis would be the teacher, and she would read and teach to her sister, who would be the student. Avis was known as always being there for other people. Whether it was her sisters or her friends, she always made sure that everyone was doing okay and that they were all taken care of. Avis and Fred were pretty close. He referred to her as his little hero. Avis attended Warren Central High School, and she loved reading books and focusing on her classes. She was the kind of girl who had a book for every situation, and you could always find her with a book. Avis graduated high school in 1997. In June 1997, the family traveled 730 miles to Disney World. Avis was camera shy whenever there was a camera around, but she loved taking pictures of her families and making scrapbooks so that she could look back on those pictures years later and talk about the memories they made. Avis attended Hines Community College in Vicksburg and graduated in May 1999. She then attended Alcorn State University in Jackson, Mississippi, where she majored in child development. In 2001, she graduated with honors and got her degree in child development and family studies. One of Avis's many goals was to open her daycare and to make it accessible and affordable for families. Her dreams were to open two daycares, one of her own and a family-run business. Avis also had dreams of getting married and starting her own family. Avis had standards when it came to men. She wanted a man who understood the significance of education, that had a steady job, and that was building a future for himself. After returning to Vicksburg, Avis worked as an assistant director at a local daycare, where she specialized in children under two. In 2004, 24-year-old Avis is in the gym with her younger sister, Frederina. A man approaches her as she's working out and asks to talk to her. He introduces himself as Keon Pittman. He's a local, and they discover that they had a lot in common when they talk. Keon Pittman was 29 years old, and he also attended Alcorn State University. Like Avis, Keon also had a strong love for kids. He taught in Tula, Louisiana, which is about 30 minutes away from Vicksburg. Keon also placed a high value on fitness, eating well, and leading a healthy lifestyle. After exchanging numbers, Avis became quite excited since she had been talking about Keon to her family a lot. After their first date, they were soon head over heels for one another. Keon was from Picayune, Mississippi. He earned 3 degrees from Alcorn State University in biology, physical education, and health sciences. Although he had originally intended to go to medical school, he chose to start a teaching career instead. After almost a year of dating, Keon received an offer to work as the boys' basketball coach and a sixth grade teacher at Jackson, Mississippi's Chastain Middle School. Keon and Avis informed the Banks family that they would be relocating to Ridgeland. They relocated to the Blackthorn subdivision by the end of 2005. The middle school was about a 25-minute drive from their new home. In addition, Keon worked as a bartender at a Mexican restaurant, which was only 8 minutes from the school. Following the move, Avis began working with babies and young children under the age of 2 at Bright Horizons Daycare. Her supervisors described her as a quiet, disciplined, and pleasant employee who got along with everyone and was extremely good with kids. Avis and Keon announced their first pregnancy in August of 2006. Naturally, her family was happy for Avis and Keon's new beginnings after learning the news, but they also put pressure on them to get married. They got married in the fall of 2006 and began planning their January 2007 wedding. Keon followed the same routine every day. In August, when the school year began, he would leave home at 7 a.m. and work until 3:30 p.m. He would then coach the boys' basketball team and return home by about 7:30 to 8 p.m. When he wasn't coaching, he would work as a restaurant bartender and return home later. Avis and Keon learned that they were expecting a boy in November 2006, and they named him Keeland. They traveled to Houston to celebrate Thanksgiving with LaTanya, Avis's older sister, and her family, and her family also spent Thanksgiving with Keon's family in Mississippi. People noticed that Keon was acting strangely at both dinners. When celebrating with Avis's family, he spent the entire evening on his phone. If he received a call, he would go outside to answer the phone. Keon would also disappear for hours at his mother's house in Mississippi, but he would always dismiss it and just claim that it was a family issue. Fred and Deborah drove to Avis and Keon's house to spend time with their daughter and help them decorate the house for Christmas. On November 29th, 2006, at 5:12 p.m., Avis receives a call from Keon, telling her that he's headed to basketball practice and that he'll speak with her later. At 5:36 p.m., she called Keon and asked what were his plans for dinner, and he told her that he would take care of it when he got home from practice. When Avis arrived home, she would go to the mailbox, pick up the mail, get back in her car, pull into the driveway, and use the garage remote to open the door. Once inside, she would make sure the garage door was closed before exiting her vehicle. When Keon got home at around 8:30 p.m., he saw a blood-covered, 5-month pregnant Avis on the garage floor. To wake her up, Keon began to shake her and hug her. When he entered the house, it had been ransacked. Despite having his phone with him, Keon chose to go knock on his neighbor's door. The woman calls the police to report a noise complaint. She then looks through the window and sees that it's Keon Pittman, her neighbor. When her husband goes to check on Keon, he starts yelling at his wife to call 911 and informs her that someone had killed his wife. She tells the 911 operator what happened. After the police come, Keon gave Avis's mother, Deborah, another call that evening. He had called her at 8:31 because he was concerned that Avis wasn't answering her phone. The second call was at 8:45 p.m., and all he told her was that she needed to get to Ridgeland because something happened to Avis. Upon arriving at the home, the coroner informs the family that their daughter had passed away and that her death was horrible. When investigators got to the crime scene at 8:46 p.m., paramedics soon followed and determined that Avis and her unborn son had died. Avis had been shot 4 times in the leg, chest, and the back of the head with a .38 caliber pistol and was stabbed multiple times and her throat was slashed. She also had her pants pulled down and there was no indication of a struggle. There was a bullet hole in the garage door, but none of the 4 or the bullet casing from the bullet hole was there. This showed that a revolver was most likely used. The door from the garage to go into the house was wide open and the doorknob made a dent in the wall. And the lock on the door was perfectly intact, so police believe that someone kicked the door open. At the back door, police determined that that was the point of entry, and they also found 2 shoe impressions found on the glass door. The shoe prints were a men's size 8. This led police to believe the house was ransacked to make it all seem like a robbery, but there really was no robbery. Avis's pants were also pulled down, and police believed that it was staged as well to throw off investigators. They took Keon to the station and began questioning him. Keon was unbothered. He showed no emotion and he made a lot of phone calls. Over the phone, Keon told someone, quote, "I don't like this at all. These mother effers think I had something to do with this shit," end quote. Keon claimed that he was singled out and that he was treated like a suspect. But, I mean, if your fiance was killed, police would, no doubt about it, investigate you and anyone else that was close to her. Whenever the investigators asked him a question during the interview, he would reword the question to make himself appear like the victim. Keon was asked by the detectives as to why he didn't use his own phone to dial 911, to which Keon told them that he didn't want to pay for roaming charges, which is odd to see your fiance covered in blood on the floor and you think, they're going to charge me, so let me not use my own phone. Let me go over to the neighbors and have them call. Detectives asked him to bring them through what he did the day of the murder. He told them that after getting off from work at the middle school, he went to pick up some groceries and then to basketball practice, which went from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Keon asked another coach if he could use her fridge at her place to put the groceries in until practice was over. At around 5 p.m., he dropped the groceries off and left at about 5:10 p.m. and talked to Avis two times. Once practice was over, at around 7:45 p.m., he picked up the groceries and went home. He called Avis again, but she never answered. Keon was photographed wearing khaki pants, brown leather shoes with blue fabric, and a blue and white pinstripe shirt. There was blood on his jeans and shirt. The blood tested positive for Avis, which makes sense since he found her and attempted to wake her up, hug her, and shake her. They tested his hands for gunshot residue and found a single particle on each hand, but that could be from the gunshot residue on Avis's clothing that rubbed off on him when he held her. Shortly after the murder, Keon left town. He left his job as a bartender and got a substitute teacher at the middle school. Then the police started to investigate Keon's life. His co-workers at the restaurant where he worked as a bartender said to police that Keon was a ladies' man. They said that women would come in only just to see him and flirt with him, and he was caught kissing multiple women before they would leave together at the end of his shift. Another strange thing is that when Keon was in the interrogation room, he was on the phone calling someone babe. Keon was also in the early stages of a relationship with 30-year-old Brenda Martin, whose son played basketball for the team he coached. Brenda stated that she had nothing to do with Avis's murder and provided an alibi for the night of the murder. Twenty-five-year-old Carla Hughes is discovered by the police as someone who frequently visited the bar. So, a little bit about Carla Hughes. She was born on June 12, 1981 in Greenville, Mississippi. She was adopted at 6 weeks old by her uncle Carl and her aunt Linda. Growing up, she was someone who excelled in everything. She did horseback riding, she did beauty pageants, and she got honors in school. She attended church and went to T.L. Weston High School. She was a cheerleader, she played every single sport, she was active in her community, and got her bachelor's degree from the University of Southern Mississippi in the early 2000s. She graduated from Belhaven College in Jackson, Mississippi with a master's degree in education. In 2004, she gave birth to her son. After that, she enrolled in graduate-level education courses at Delta State University. During this time, she got a job at Chastain Middle School in Jackson, Mississippi, and that is where she met Keon Pittman. When Carla was taken in to be questioned, she told police that she had seen Keon at the end of the day and that he asked her if he could store his food in her fridge, to which she said yes. Keon put the groceries in the fridge at 4:40 p.m. When Keon called Carla during practice to ask him when he might return to pick up the groceries, she informed him that she was heading home. At 7:50 p.m., he drove to Carla's after basketball practice, which ended at 7:30 p.m. She claims that after he picked up the groceries, they had a brief conversation and he left. At 8:45 p.m., she claimed that Keon called her, screaming and telling her what happened to Avis. He kept calling her while he was waiting in the police car and at the station, but he wouldn't call the police when he saw his pregnant fiance on the floor. When they questioned Carla about her relationship with Keon, she said it was merely platonic and nothing sexual was happening. After more questioning, she then told police that they had sex once and it was nothing serious. And she said that they never did more than a little kissing, right after she admitted that they had sex. She continued by expressing her respect for Keon's engagement. Again, right after she admitted having sex with him. When the murder occurred, which police determined to be between 5:45 and 6 p.m., Carla had no alibi. Keon's alibi held up. Numerous witnesses confirmed his presence during basketball practice, and evidence from his cell phone indicated that he was at the school when the murder occurred. According to Carla's cell phone records, she called Keon Pittman between 5:30 and 6:05 p.m., while she was near Avis's home. On December 5th, a man provided a tip claiming to know the exact gun that was used in the murder as well as who used it. Patrick Nash, the cousin of Avis, is brought in by police. He claims that on November 26, Carla came to his house to beg him for some protection because her apartment had previously been broken into. Patrick gave her a 4-inch folding hunting knife and a loaded Rossi 38 caliber revolver, which he loaded with 5 bullets before she left. After her interview on December 1st, she gave the gun back to her cousin. It had been cleaned and all 5 of the rounds were gone. She explained that she used the 5 missing bullets for target practice, and she never gave the knife back. The gun was taken by ballistic experts to be test-fired to determine if the bullets found at the scene were a match from the revolver. And it was a match, meaning that was the gun that was used in the murder. Carla was brought in for questioning, and this time she brought a lawyer. Carla was then charged with accessory to murder, which she pleaded not guilty, and was being held in a detention center. On December 8, 2006, a search warrant was obtained for Carla's home. When the search warrant was carried out, they discovered a handwritten poem addressed to Carla and signed with the initials KP, which stood for Keon Pittman, as well as a photo of Keon on her nightstand. In her closet, there was a bunch of shoes still in the boxes, and they found a pair of women's size 10 black tread safe shoes. The shoes were taken to the crime lab, and the impressions on these shoes were a perfect match to the ones found on the glass door. Police were looking for a man's size 8, but a woman's size 10 is a man's size 8. The shoe was taken for additional testing, and they found dried blood stains when they did a DNA test, which belonged to Avis Banks. Carla was now being charged with 2 counts of capital murder. Carla's preliminary trial was set for January 2, 2007, and Keon took the stand. Keon testified that he first met Carla in August 2006, and right away they clicked. They began by casually talking before exchanging letters and occasionally asking students to send the notes that they wrote to the other person. 3 weeks after their fling started, she tells Keon that she rides a motorcycle and that she needed to stop by her house so that she can change her clothes. She decided to take her clothes off right in front of Keon. Carla started showing up at the bar. She would drink, and at the end of his shift, he would go over to her place and they would have sex. Keon stated that Carla was all in when it came to sleeping together. She wanted to try everything, and pretty quickly they were sleeping together 3 to 4 times a week. For the Labor Day weekend, Keon and Carla took a trip to Memphis, and he states that he didn't love Carla, it was just the sex. Carla starts to pressure Keon into leaving Avis, tells her that she is in love with him. Carla then told Keon that she was pregnant. One time, Keon and Avis went to Detroit to attend his cousin's wedding, and Carla was there, waiting in the car and watching them. Keon confronts Carla about it, and she says that she wasn't the one driving the car, it was her aunt. She wasn't at the airport. She eventually tells him the truth and says that she just wanted to see who the woman was. Carla then tells Keon that she wasn't actually pregnant, it was just a false positive. And Keon is happy about this, and Carla gets frustrated because she's wondering to herself, why are you happy that I'm not pregnant? She then gets in her car and drives to Avis's home to tell her about the affair. Keon is following behind her and told her that if she showed up at the house, he would call the police. When Avis and Keon spent the holidays with Avis's family, the person who kept calling him was Carla, begging him to spend the holidays with him. After Thanksgiving, Avis and Keon spent some time at his mom's house, and Carla, being Carla, decides to get a hotel nearby and begs Keon to be with her. They meet up at a bar one night, and he tells her he has to go. And Carla tells Keon that something has to change. And after that, Keon becomes distant from her. In December 2007, Keon relocated to Detroit, Michigan, where he legally changed his name and got married to someone else. Police obtained Keon's marriage license on February 14, 2008, and gave it to Carla in the hopes that she would speak, but she remained silent. On October 15, 2009, Carla Hughes' trial began. Prosecutors argued that she murdered Avis to be with Keon. Keon testified at trial, saying he was partially responsible for the murder because he had a woman who loved him, who was carrying their baby and working hard, and he appreciated none of it. Keon had a key to her apartment, which he gave back to her in November 2006. Carla bought the tread-safe shoes for Keon to use when he was bartending, but they told him not to wear them, so he gave them back to her in November 2006. Another thing is, in 2004, Carla was pregnant and engaged, but a couple days before her wedding, her fiancé called it off. From all the evidence, the shoe impressions, the gun, and the cell phone records, on October 13th, 2009, after 8 hours of deliberation, the jury reached a verdict. Carla Hughes was found guilty of 2 counts of capital murder by the jury. However, she was eligible for the death penalty, but she was given 2 consecutive life sentences without the possibility of parole. She's currently serving her life sentence at the Central Mississippi Correctional Facility for Women in Pearl, Mississippi. End of episode thoughts. It's so sad that Avis had so much hopes and dreams that she was getting so close to, just for it all to be taken away in such a horrific way, just because the woman her fiancé was sleeping with didn't want to be second. Both of these women were smart and educated with goals, and they had dreams, and they wanted a life for themselves. And Carla killed a woman for a man that he was cheating on her with. And he would have done the same with Carla. Even if they were in a relationship, he would have done the same. Find the next woman and cheat. Never let a man bring you so low in life that you take someone's life, because 10 times out of 10, you're going to prison. You're not going to live this happily ever after. The same goes for men. Don't let a woman bring you down so low that you have to take someone's life. Avis was so smart and beautiful with her whole life ahead of her. She wanted to be a mom. She loved kids. She was kind and gentle, and she wanted to make a difference for families, and it's a tragedy that it never happened. And with that, today's story comes to an end. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Remember, every Thursday there is a new episode at 7 a.m. You can keep up with me and the podcast on Instagram at Criminal Curiosity Pod. That is all that I have for you today. Please be safe out there. Look out for one another. Until next time, bye everyone.